Mr. Severson and Ms. Stillings.
Can I see Bob is online and he's now in front of the camera.
Okay. Thank you.
I'm here.
Okay. Thank you, Bob.
Let's move on to new business. Item A, consideration approval of R&R project and increase to the fiscal year 2020 R&R budget. Resubmarine cable, Warren Alkowski. There's a motion, I believe, on page 70. Somebody would like to make it?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
I move to approve the R&R project, RR20349, subcable banks to Oranoski with an overall budget of $13,370,352 as presented at the September 30th, 2020 board meeting.
Okay, thank you. Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, there's been a motion and a second. With that, Trey, I'll turn it over to you for discussion.
Certainly. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is kind of just a perfunctory deal that we need to do regarding to shifting a feasibility project over into our capital program in order to allow us to start depreciation. Now that we're clearly moving forward with the cable replacement, it's appropriate to move it out of a feasibility status and into a regular R&R project.
Okay. From the board, any questions or comments? Hearing none, Sharon, would you please call roll?
Well, Larson?
Yes.
Lynn?
Yes.
Prysanka?
Yes.
Amelon?
Yes.
And Severson? Mr. Severson?
Robert?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. The project's been approved unanimously. We'll move on to item B, consideration approval of contract award, read 2021-23 annual transmission line maintenance contracts. And there's a motion on page 72, I believe.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Bob.
I move to authorize staff to enter into the contract with Electrical Power Constructors, Inc. for SEPA's 2021-2023 annual transmission line maintenance contract for the lump sum bid of $1,738,991 plus a 10% contingency for supplemental or emergency work of $173,899 for the total not to exceed value of $1,912,890.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Robert.
I'll second that.
Thank you. It's been moved and seconded. And with that, Trey, I'll turn that back to you for discussion purposes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We received two bids on this particular RFP. And in my assessment, I believe both contractors are fully capable of conducting the work. And so we're recommending to the board that we go with the lowest price bidder. And I will note they are our current line contractor, and we've been satisfied with their work to date. So.
Okay. Are there questions for Trey?
Mr. Chair, this is Lisa.
Go ahead, Lisa.
Trey, why do you think there was such a big delta between the two bidders?
They just missed certain elements of the bid. They overbid. So we do an aerial inspection. And of the system, certain portions of it, and then we do actual pole climbing inspections. And in my assessment of the bid, it looked like Northern Power Line Constructors actually priced their aerial inspections, which take just a fraction of the time, more than their climbing inspections. So I don't know who they had putting their bid together this time. We actually, I scratched my head a bit too, Lisa. So I went back and, you know, looked at some of the previous correspondence and other things. And I don't know if it was just whoever they had putting their bid together. But clearly, they missed the bid completely.
Yeah. Normally my concern is that the person with the lower bid missed something, but, thank you for explaining. I appreciate that.
And I'm very comfortable with the low bid because they're currently doing the work. And, so they're very familiar with the requirements of the job.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions for Trey? If not, Sharon, would you please call the roll?
Will Severson? Mr. Severson?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Lynn?
Yes.
Prysanka?
Yes.
Amelon?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Sharon. Item C on there was consideration and approval of recruitment and hiring ReHydro Communications, the SCADA networking engineer. There's a motion, I believe, on page 73.
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
I move to authorize the agency CEO to recruit and hire a full-time hydro communications SCADA network engineer to provide support for all SEPA facilities within the salary range of $98,357 to $133,071 annual based on successful candidate skills and experience.
Thank you. Is there a second?
Mr. Chair, I'll
second that. Steve, I'll second.
Okay. We've, now that we have a motion and a second, Trey, again, I'll come back to you for discussion. Start it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So this is a follow-on item. I actually mentioned it, I believe, in our last meeting that I the board should anticipate I'll bring something forward. But I wanted enough time to do a salary analysis. And so I reached out to our consultant in tandem, which we've used in the past for the whole staff. And he pulled together his evaluation for this position. I've included that in your board packet. I've reviewed that in detail, and I feel he's pretty spot on with the range that he's provided. My only concern is I really don't have a good sense on how recruitment's going to go on this with this COVID thing. I don't know if there's people waiting in the wings that want to go to work or don't. I don't know if there's people that are looking to move out of particular areas, the hot spots where there's riots and all this other stuff, and move to Alaska. I don't know what normally we try to time these recruitments, with a cycle maybe a little bit earlier, but so it's going to be a very interesting recruitment process with all these dynamics. But I think clearly during our discussions during the strategic planning initiative, and actually we talked about this with the board off and on for several years, that this is a key position that right now we spend a lot of money on consultants and outside resources to do some of this. Right now I've also have Robert covering a lot of these duties in addition to the other items that he's doing. And I think it'll balance out our team. It's a much needed position. Anyway, so this is, I think, just kind of a recap of some of the discussions we had during the strategic planning, and I would like authorization to get the show on the go and start recruitment and hire a person. I do anticipate, just looking at the timing of things, more than likely this person would be coming on, and if we're lucky, in the first quarter of next year. And so for that reason, I'm just looking for authorization to go ahead and proceed with hiring within the price range, or a salary range, excuse me. And it will not require a budget increase at this time. And then of course we'll bring, those numbers to you in next year's budget.
Thank you, Trey. Questions for Trey?
I have a question.
Robert?
Mr. Chair, thank you. Hey, Trey, is this the person that's going to be responsible for IT security?
So right now we use a third party for our business side. And typically I try to separate when we talk about our networks and things like that. One's the business side and one's the operational side, the plant side. And we try to keep an air gap between those as much as we can for security purposes. So we would maintain our current administrative business side, TexRS contractor to do the overall. This would be more in the communications for, you know, you've heard Robert talk about it several times, the comm systems that interlink all of our sites, all the switches, and certainly some of the security involved in some of those switches. But it's actually a lot more broader than that. I envision this position wearing a lot of hats, as all SEPA employees do. You know, they potentially would do SCADA related issues, you know, PLC background type things. And then also on the comm side. And we certainly have enough work to keep this person busy full time, plus some. So.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Go ahead, Bob.
Mr. Jeremy.
Oh, I'm sorry. Jeremy, go ahead.
That's okay. I think that with recruitment, Trey mentioned recruitment. I think that you guys should have a pretty good success rate with getting applicants to apply. KPU Electric had just put out a request for a SCADA technician position, and we had actually a really good result from that as far as the amount of applicants that we had. And of the applicants we had two of those applicants were highly qualified. I mean, very qualified. So, you know, I think you'll have a pretty good outcome for recruitment would be my gut feeling on that.
That's good to hear. Because, yeah, I don't really have a sense. And, of course, you know, we're looking for somebody that does have a broad, already deep experience in these areas because we don't really have time to train somebody in-house. We need somebody that's going to hit the ground running, and that's reassuring. Thank you.
Thank you. Other questions for Trey?
So through the chair.
Go ahead, Bob.
So, Jeremy, would you mind me asking you what the price range was on that? Was it similar?
I'm sorry?
Was the wage range or the salary range similar?
No. We could speak to that away from this venue if you like.
Well, I mean, I think if we went out for it, it's probably a public document anyway. But I would just, because I'm sensitive to what the utilities hire at and pay, and I'm also sensitive to what SEPA hires. I would hope there wouldn't be a huge disparity. I could expect some being the type of work they're doing, but
the only thing that I could say is that based on what KPU currently can offer as far as compensation with regard to those positions, we were not successful in being competitive with the higher qualified candidates that we had.
Yeah, so I think that's important to understand. And since we have a very small staff at SEPA, we want to make sure that we have fully qualified people to handle those positions. But I was just curious, and I wanted to make sure that the other board members understood some of the, I guess, ins and outs of that. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you, Bob.
So, Mr. Chair, if I may just add one further comment. I would just like to also highlight that this is a salary position. This isn't a union tech position type. So it may be a little bit different than some folks here envision. I mean, this person's obviously will be expected to, as all of our folks here, we all work in excess of 40 hours typically per week and without further overtime or any of that type of compensation. So,
I just have a quick question there, Trey. If you don't get, have you looked at growing our own, so to speak, if you do not get reasonably qualified candidates on that?
So this particular position, I really need somebody that's got experience because there's a lot of risk involved. And we need somebody with a high level of experience so I don't have to pull another staff person out to hold their hand, so to speak. Not in this particular position. This is one that I think to get the type of person that we're looking for somebody probably that's got 7 to 10 years experience in the field already.
Thank you. Other questions for Trey? If not, Sharon, would you please call the roll on it?
Will. Amelon? I'm sorry, there is interference. Mr. Amelon, did you say?
Yes.
Thank you. Sievertson?
Yes.
Larson?
Yes.
Lynn?
Yes.
Prysanka?
Yes.
Thank you.
All righty. Moving on to that item D on the discussion on CEO's annual review. Some background on this. Trey and I took what both Joel and Bob Sievertson had done over the years, which is excellent. And I tried initially to include some of the things that we've discussed over the last couple of years with the board into that package. And Trey and I have been going back and forth numerous times on wording and changes and so forth. And so what you have in the package is where we finally came up with in terms of evaluation criteria for performance review. And then Joel, I believe, has taken a look at that. That's one aspect of it. And the second one is with Sharon's help and Trey's help, we tried to put together a kind of a timeline that could be used in future years for doing a review of when parts of it would be done. And with that, before I open it up, I'll turn it back to Trey to see if he would add anything or make any correction to what I've said here.
Mr. Chair, I think that's a good characterization of where we're at today.
Okay, thank you. Joel, before I turn it open, do you have any thoughts?
My only thought is that the reason to insert me in the process is just so the board can have a confidential discussion for this review that is part of Trey's contract.
And that I believe that's in the process that we had. If you have, and what I'll do is I'll say that the process we put in place and the evaluation criteria would be generic, whether it be Trey or whoever we might have as a CEO. And so I would appreciate if you have thoughts or want changes made that we keep it generic for this purpose, if you would. And with that, I'll open it up for comments on that.
So, Mr. Chair, I'd also, if I can add just one thing that came to mind, I'd just like to emphasize, too, that, this should be a living document that over the years, for whoever's in the CEO position, that the board reviews this periodically to update it so it accurately reflects the goals and objectives of the board through either strategic planning sessions or just good dialogue amongst the board. So. It's certainly not anything that's set in stone and really should be refreshed, reasonable interval. So.
Thank you, Trey. Good talk. Comments on it or discussion on any parts of that?
Mr. Chair, Torin Petersburg.
Go ahead, Torin.
Yeah, I like the timeline you had here on third quarter, fourth quarter. And I just thought that paired nicely. I think in the last contract with the CEO, if we don't give him notice 6 months before we renew his contract, then I believe we have to compensate him. So I think, you know, if we're looking at June, basically, we need to decide if we're renewing the contract. That gives us, you know, basically we do a review in December, and then we'd have 6 months to, you know, try to work through any issues and then do the review before we renew the contract. So I think the timing on that makes sense to me.
Thank you. Other comments? Hearing none, we'll then proceed with both the process and the evaluation criteria that we've presented here. Next item on the agenda was the CEO report, and with that, Trey, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'll just hit a couple of high points in my report. I'm assuming you all read it. We already went over the COVID-19 update. So I won't spend any time there. Under safety, I will note that we did have a recordable lost time incident with an employee who did return to work on light duty, but now is off for a reassessment. And really can't talk much about more about that due to HIPAA laws, but just want to reassure the board that I do take safety as my number one priority. I want everybody to help to be able to go home at the end of the day. And we took immediate action after this particular incident to mitigate the hazard. And, you know, we continually train our employees and try to find engineered solutions to permanently fix any hazards that we come across prior to any incident. So certainly nobody's more disappointed in this than me, but anyway, I just want to assure the board that still is our number one priority. So you'll notice that I kept my governmental affairs and external industry activities very brief on my report there. And that's due to the fact that I did include an advocacy strategy behind my report. And I think this was a deliverable in the strategic planning meeting we had. And I think for the most part, the board has expressed that they're very satisfied with the progress and interaction on the advocacy front for the organization over the years. As you all know, I have a lot of involvement with multiple entities. And so, Robert, if you will, maybe just move to page 89, and I'll just kind of talk through this a little bit, just at a high level. And then I'll pause and, you know, see if this meets the board's expectation or if they had something totally else in mind. I tried to, for starters, just kind of put a background there on why I'm doing it. Essentially, it's just to kind of memorialize the thought process about our advocacy strategy framework. I will note that for the most part, this is a really, really dynamic process. Things are changing constantly throughout the year. And in a lot of ways, I use an adaptive management strategy to deal with those issues as they emerge and, you know, make decisions on the fly to my best ability to influence the outcomes of those. In the diagram there, it just kind of gives you, I'll say, a real high level thought process of, I'll say, the building blocks for good advocacy. How you identify those, and what intended actions you're trying to achieve, and then how do you get out there and shop those, you know, and come out with the desired outcomes, you know, through some of them take public process, some of them take you have to work through influencers, sometimes you just go straight to the decision maker, so it's very issue dependent. But I think that's just a helpful thing for folks that maybe don't deal with this type of thing on a regular basis. If you want to move to page 90 there, Robert. And so I touched on a little bit these, just my brief comments there. So there's kind of just six basic questions that you kind of ask yourself, how is the strategy positioned? Who specifically is the strategy trying to influence and how? What are the underlying assumptions about how changes happen? Who else is working on this and how? You might have some opportunities for collaboration with other groups that I may be able to join forces on. And we do that routinely through our other advocacy groups, Alaska Power Association, Northwest Hydroelectric Association, National Hydropower Association, Southeast Conference. I mean, some examples of that type of stuff. And then how will the strategy look over time? I think it's good to understand the life of these strategies. And once again, it gets down to very specific issues, down to that granularity. And as many, we've had several initiatives that will have spanned almost a decade that the organization has been an advocate for and has stepped in and out and in and out to have our voice heard and to play a role at certain times during those efforts. And a few of those are coming to fruition, actually. So, and some of them we've been very successful, everything from funding to policy changes have been fairly significant. And then just a couple of what interim outcomes are relevant to know if the strategy is on track. And of course, I track this stuff on a daily basis for the most part. And, most of the time you can see if you're getting off track, but you may have some other measurables that you look at. And I'll just note that some of that structure I just talked about is just some fundamental structure I took out of the advocacy strategy framework or a tool for articulating an advocacy theory of change. The next section is a little bit more of my specific thoughts on the elements of advocacy, and I touch upon key contacts. Key contacts are really the nuts and bolts of advocacy. If you don't build those relationships, it's very hard to get stuff done. And you have to build, for the most part, it's beneficial to build those ahead of time before you actually need them, because then it's just a phone call away. And thankfully, in the structure we've had here at SEPA and with the strong support of the board, I've been able to build those contacts significantly over the years, and it's paid dividends. We've got millions of dollars in grant funding for multiple projects, and we've been able to achieve significant policy changes, regulatory changes. So sometimes I think the value of all this that goes on, I kind of just take it as it comes behind the scenes and try to update the board on our quarterly updates or regular board meetings. But rest assured, there's a lot going on behind the scenes all the time on these issues. And, I try not to bore the board with the daily details and try to keep you informed on the high level stuff. And so that goes to the monitoring and analyzing issues. There's a lot that goes on in that, and identification of, opportunities. Sometimes there's, new opportunities or you create new opportunities that aren't even on anybody's radar yet. So I look for those, opportunities to jump in and see if we can, get a positive result. And of course, we have to establish priorities through that process as well. There's a lot of political capital. You build it up, and then you use it, and you kind of have to balance that. You don't want to inundate your legislators or decision makers or influencers every single day. You really have to. It's very strategic in nature, and I guess that lends itself to my earlier comment on how dynamic the process is. Some of that's a gut thing. You got to know when the right time is to step in and take a position. And then in also the timing with the legislative sessions on when to apply pressure and when to do that at specific times. And build, momentum. That kind of segues into approach. You know, how do you get things done? And I provided some examples down a little lower that kind of fall in line with how you're seeking achievable outcomes. And you'll note that there's really quite a variety on approaches. It just is very topic specific. And so I've listed those. Unless the board wants me to, I can touch on all those, but I'm sure you guys have read those. And I think you'll agree that we've got a pretty robust plan in place right now. And that'll carry on into the next year as well. But so with that, I'm going to stop right there. And certainly, first of all, would like some feedback from the board. Is this what you kind of envisioned? That I provide a framework, and then kind of highlight where we're at today, and hoping that meets the expectation of the board.
Thank you, Trey. Comments or from the board to address Trey's questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, I imagine, Trey, with the COVID incidents, with the election year and all that kind of stuff, it's pretty tough to access or get answers back in regards to federal issues. And I think that we're going to see a real problem of trying to find any resources. So it's probably going to be more policy or regulations associated for the next year with the state of Alaska. Is there anything looming in the near future that you can see that is going to be an issue in regards to state or federal regulations for our operation?
So, yes, and there's been some ongoing things. And just last week, there were like two larger pieces of legislation that got in that had passed respective houses or the Senate, and they're now going over to the other side. There's a lot of big stuff in play right now, and it's kind of changing daily, and these are huge bodies of legislation that it may be hundreds of pages long, literally. And then so you got to delve into those and find out which specific detail may impact something for SEPA now. Or I also look at these through the lens of how might this affect the organization 20 years from now. There's a bunch of those going on, Bob. And then everybody I'm talking to, they're saying nothing's going to get done, or something might get done in a lame duck session. There's just a lot in flux right now. But I would say for the most part, that deals with inside the regulatory framework.
So this is what I expect, and I think you've laid it out pretty well here, what your duties are in regards to governmental affairs. You want to be in position so that if something comes available, you can kind of plug into it and maybe get something not only for SEPA, but for Southeast or the rest of Alaska in regards to hydropower or regulations or that kind of stuff. And hopefully we can plug into some funding here in the future to help us with some of the hydro issues we got going on. So thanks.
Yeah, you bet. The as you can see on the list here, I've been hitting the pavement really hard on this submarine cable funding potential. I know it's a super, super long shot, but I also recognize if you don't get out there and ask and find potential programmatic funds that you might be able to get some money from, it'll never get done if you don't try it. So as you can see, I've been turning over every stone, sending letters out, meeting with folks, and still holding out hope that potentially in the future, if it's not for this project, it may be for another project down the road, that there are some federal channels for programmatic funds that we would at least be eligible to apply for. In some of these instances, I've actually been able to get the language changed in federal legislation to give SEPA potential eligibility in the future, or at least strengthen our position for eligibility that did not exist before. So I have been making a little bit of progress there, substantive project progress. But, you know, those things have quite a long path to go before any potential funding gets thrown at them. But there are some opportunities in DOE right now that may result in the a potential grant program that we could apply to.
Other comments, questions for Trey?
Yeah, Trey? This is Steve. Trey, I really appreciate you putting this together for us. And, you know, when it's laid out in such a clear manner, it you know, we sort of, it's an invisible side of your job to the board. And I appreciate that you took the time to kind of outline everything. And I just would echo your comments about you never know where the opportunities are. And I'm hopeful that as we round the corner here with COVID and all these other things, that we're able to possibly access increased funding for major infrastructure replacements. So I'm glad you're setting us up for being in line for that stuff. So thank you for this.
Yeah, you bet, Steve. And I guess I'll just add before I forget here, on the submarine cable portion, I'm also actually working with ADA as well. They may have a mechanism for bonding that may be more of a streamlined effort than the Alaska Municipal Bond Bank. And I had a meeting set up with their lead guy here the other day, and he had to cancel due to another appointment that came up with CARES Act distribution of funds for that. So anyway, we're planning on circling back here in the next week. And so I'm also not only on the regulatory front, I'm also this advocacy also has to do with how we outreach for potential financing of projects too, which is kind of another unique element.
Thank you. Other comments for questions for Trey?
Mr. Chair, Jeremy here.
Go ahead, Jeremy.
I know that I didn't see that it was particularly included in this particular packet here, but Trey did send out an email to keep us informed, Southeast by the Numbers. That was a fantastic slide presentation that you sent us. I appreciate that. And then also you'd sent some indication about the roadless rule on the 30-day countdown. I know that since you've sent that out, it sounds like there's a little bit more information possibly available with that. Will that be something that you speak to maybe on our next meeting with how that may impact the organization moving forward in the future?
Certainly. Yeah, thanks for pointing that out. Yeah, I've been trying to keep you guys updated as this stuff develops so that you don't just get it all dumped on you in the packet. So on the roadless rule, that's one of those initiatives that I've literally been working on since the day I walked in the door. I think we're very close to getting a record of decision, and then once I see what's listed in the registry, in the federal registry, I'll go back and review that and see what the final language is that's actually on the file there, and provide an update to the board and how that might affect us in future development. I think there's a couple of aspects to the roadless rule that have always been my focus, and it's essentially to keep options open for not only the electrical industry, but also the telecom industry, because a lot of times we use the same corridors for our transmission as comms. And I just don't like to see potential sites get locked up prematurely before they've been evaluated. And earlier in the process, and we could talk Rolla's Rule for days, literally, because it's got such a long pedigree of issues and things. But in short, whether you support the Rolla's Rule or not, the agency's view is always to maximize our our opportunities for now and in the future to best meet the needs of the ratepayers at a reasonably low cost and while still being environmentally responsible. So, you know, and just to give you a simple example to put that in context, for instance, they did have established transmission line corridors at one point, and there were particular instances by shifting that particular corridor over so we could run a line down a little bit different route. The impacts would have been exactly the same or perhaps even less, but it would have lowered the cost, overall cost of the project. And to have somebody predetermine that we couldn't do that, that just doesn't seem reasonable in if you just think about it. Why would we take a more expensive route when there's a more direct route that has the same impact, essentially? So those are the type of things that we, as an agency, were trying to address. I won't discuss the logging portion or anything of that nature. That was, I think, where a lot of the emotion surrounded the particular roadless issue. But from a utilities perspective, we've always tried to stick with that.
Thank you.
Other questions for Trey? If not, let's move on then to the staff reports. What I'll do is that I'm going.
Mr. Chair, if I can interrupt you there.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Trey.
I want to talk about hydrophones.
Yeah, I wanted to circle back to page 87, if I can, and just hit on a couple of quick things that I think are really important for the board. And I just wanted more to give the board the opportunity to comment or ask questions. So everybody knows that SEPA, we spend a lot of money on commercial insurance, about $475,000 every year. And I just wanted to highlight that, and I've been forecasting this to the board for the last couple of years, that we were at the bottom of the trough on premiums. And frankly, we've been very successful at getting improved coverage for less cost. Case in point, we got the submarine cables added a couple of years ago, which is going to potentially is going to pay off big time. But that has shifted now. And all you got to do is look around the U.S. and look at all the natural disasters, hurricanes and flooding, you know, due to the storm surge and tornadoes and fires, and the losses are just massive. And our underwriters essentially said we're anticipating significant increases. We're still working on these, and Sharon's done a fantastic job at turning around all the applications and putting out all the details that are required for this. But do anticipate that in the next year's budget, some of those numbers are going to go up quite a bit. So, and I've included a copy of the insurance strategy behind my memo as well. And I'm not going to go through that today unless anybody has any specific questions. Fairly self-explanatory, suffice to say, going to be pretty significant increases. And I expect that trend. Just seeing everything that's happening right now, it's probably going to continue for a couple of years. Any questions there, real quick, before I move on? Okay. So best practice.
I mean, you're talking about insurance overall, or just the property risk and stuff?
So if you look at that list there, that's just the highlights, Bob, with yep. The coverages. Those are the different coverages and the expected increases for every single coverage.
So a lot of times insurance rates are determined by how much risk the company's going to, I guess, accept. So does that mean that in order to mitigate some of this, we could increase our deductible and hold more in our self-insurance fund, that type of thing?
So right now, we're with under the Aegis program for a portion of this, and that's a collective industry group that goes in and pools together to lower their rates as much as they can. I think for the most part, we take the last time we did this, we took a hard look at anywhere we could potentially reduce rates. If you recall, we had a lengthy discussion about D&O for officers, and we decided that, you know, for really the cost, it wasn't worth it to try to shave a little bit off the premium. I think we should recognize that we've done an excellent job over the last 5-6 years in achieving lower deductibles. When we went with Aegis, our deductibles went down in almost every area and our coverages went up. So we have a much better program than we did 5 years ago, for an example. And I mean, we're going to see some cost increase, but I don't think at this point, at least our recommendation from our insurance consultant, you know, isn't to lower coverages in any specific areas to save a couple of bucks.
So do we get any advantage being a interaction agency of the state?
I don't think so. Cause we're grouped in with a whole bunch of other electric utilities. I mean, that's part of the beauty is that we kind of collectively take on this risk and share that. So I don't think we get any specific break. We do get some acknowledgement, I'll say, if we haven't had a major loss for years. And so when we go to place the property insurance, for example, maybe next year, you know, if we, because right now our current submarine cable is still in process, that particular claim. So I don't know how much that's really going to impact this year's rates, but it could impact them next year. In fact, they may not even offer us the submarine cable coverage in subsequent years, but I expect to still have that coverage for this next year, I think. And that's what I'm hearing anyway.
Trey, this is Joel. There's no specific immunity granted by the state because we're public agency of the state. So we still have to get insurance.
So I know a lot of this insurance increases are going to be due to the tremendous fire loss and liabilities associated with that in the lower 48. And so I imagine that they have to adjust their rates to try to pay for those losses over the long term. But, you know, Alaska, Southeast Alaska, if you look at the potential for those natural disasters, it's unlikely you're going to have a huge wildfire. If you go back to the FEMA analysis of flood damage and stuff in Alaska, we just haven't had any claims over the time when we painted an exorbitant rate or the people that have the properties do. So I would hate for us to get caught up in what is happening in some of these drier states that have, issues. And if there's any way that the insurance companies are going to try to group you so that you're not in that high risk category, I don't know.
Yes. So we, Bob, we try to make those arguments every year when we're negotiating. we do it. And, you know, I think everybody's got to, first of all, recognize that's the whole concept of insurance is you share the risk. And, clearly we're going to get hit hard on aviation coverage because there's been, over the last few years, there's been a lot of losses in Alaska and we are in a higher risk area. I think